Welcome to a new episode of the China Flexter podcast. Today we are going to talk about bilingual education, especially focus on English as a second language in China. And we couldn't have a better guest than Luke, who is from Canada and who has been in China for 24 years to always explore this industry and have so many lessons learned, which we can discuss today. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you, Francis. I'm happy to be here. Actually, I see myself more as a traveler, always on the move, open to encounter new things and people. And it all started when I was working for the cabinet of the Minister of Education in my country. And it was in 1998, 1999. So the minister invited me to come to China and to train Chinese school principals. So that's the start of my journey. Finishing this after 4 years, I got a very interesting experience leading a education project, Plan International. That's an international NGO working in the poorest areas of Shanxi province. So the NGO was active in that province, and we were really going into difficult areas. In the north of the province, you have the Lus Plateau, so valleys bang up and down. So you could find a very small school, one teacher for four pupils, grade one and grade two. When the pupils would finish that school, they would climb out of that valley and descend into the next valley to go to the primary school for grade three and grade four. And after that, again, climbing, very difficult conditions, but it was poor, meaning that for 30 years, nobody went there to help out. Teachers were not always paid their salaries. Most cases, they were not paid at all. And it coincidentally fell together with me getting to know my wife in Wuhan. And we finally got to marry at the end of 2003. Finally, I gave it up in 2006 to join my wife in Wuhan, starting with a language training center. We added a coffee bar. And then out of the blue, I got an offer from the European Commission to work as a consultant in Liberia, a well-paid job as consultant, 1.5 year in a difficult country, West Africa, Liberia, civil war for 15 years, building up the country again. So we had to train underqualified teachers. I didn't have to train, I had to administer because we had two universities, but they were not following up well. So it was a very hands-on project and a very nice break from 10 years China. And it helped me actually when I got back from Liberia to think about what do I really want in life. Of course, I want to stay into education, but what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And I really finally found out that after all, I don't really understand the parents, how they look at their kids, what they expect from their kids. And that's why actually, instead of continuing as consultant, instead of this, I worked for 2 years with parents, understanding parents, teaching the kids, helping them to study abroad, being a therapist by times because kids give up studying. Kids go through a divorce. So these are all strong, rich experiences that shaped my life in China.
That's a fantastic experience. And I don't think we've ever had this on the Flexpat podcast before. So it's really nice. So if you jump from 1999 to 2023, what would you describe as a challenge of Flexpat in education?
I think that the biggest challenge, it doesn't matter who you are, but you are a stranger in this country. I think what I've learned is that you need a break from this country. China is really demanding, and spending 1.5 years in West Africa was the most welcoming break I could imagine, because I really got back and reflecting on what do I really want to do in China. My life is in China. My friends are here. My wife is here. Her family is here, and I can visit my family in my country. That's not a problem. So it's that was really decisive. Allowing yourself to experience things, to get deeper into the culture, like working for the NGO, international NGO, working with villagers. This is something that opened my world. So I think these two experiences were decisive for the rest of my life here in China.
Yeah, so you would advise professionals to also do something similar, right? To work in China, but to allow themselves to get a break at times when needed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because these experiences come at a moment that you don't plan for it. You don't even think about this. And it's suddenly there. And it's like I said, for Liberia, I didn't, for the first time coming to China, I didn't think about it. Just yes, I'll do it. I'm a traveler. I'm an adventurer. So I want people to be more adventurous. That's the way to discover countries like China.
So if we go into bilingual education, could you define this for us?
Sure, because if you, I think the whole movement of bilingual education started off in China around 2013. I think the first successful program, they weren't really the first one, but the first successful program in bilingual education was done by Keystone School in Beijing. I know the owners, so that's helpful. But when I started 1 year later with a bilingual primary education program in Wuhan, most parents had no idea what it meant. You come from an education where we added English as a second language, and some schools were adding more English classes as a second language. What we actually explained to our parents was that no, it's not like this. It's not adding more English language classes. It's about creating something extra, an extra value. For example, if you teach signs in English and in Chinese, wouldn't it be better to work together to see which parts will maybe more the theoretical part by the Chinese teacher and the more practical experimental part by the foreign teacher, for example. So you create extra value with bilingual education. So slowly starting up and finding that extra value, what was that extra value, is breaking down borders between subjects. And I was thinking always like 1 plus 1 is 3, the Chinese education plus the international education and the blending, that then you come to 3. We had a project where kids, grade 3, grade 4, were making their own regamian shop. So they had to learn how to make regamian, the ingredients. They had to design logos, a menu, design their cardboard ball. And we had a parent, we invited parents, and it was a family gathering, and everyone had their regamian stand selling local noodles in English, in Chinese, in history, comparing with noodles in other countries, in Southeast Asia, and so on and so on. You break down borders, and bilingual suddenly becomes something more than lingual. It's culture. It's a global approach. That was new to China.
Now we're in 2023 again, right? And you're telling us lots of stories how this came to today, but now it's a super big industry. So what is it like now?
I think now I wouldn't say it's still bilingual. When it all started up in 2013, 14, 15, that's when most of the bilingual programs came in. It was shaping. You need to have a minimum of, let's say, for example, 30% of the curriculum is in English. Otherwise, you will never get a balance. At that time, I had to fight for this. We see now a few schools where they teach 40% of the curriculum in English, but it's completely separate from the Chinese curriculum. So it's not bilingual anymore. It's just the Chinese do their stuff and the international ones do their stuff. Look at governments, the authorities adding more PE in primary school, adding moral education, house economics. So there is no time anymore for international courses. So schools are going back to just a few extra courses of English language training. So it's, I think, mostly gone, bilingual education. That's why I meet and I hear a lot of parents saying like, no, it's not the same anymore. Can I come to your international school right now? Because I'm working for an international school in Kunshan, the Canadian International School, Kunshan. So I hear from parents that nowadays bilingual education is not bilingual anymore.
So, what options do Chinese parents have to really provide their kids with a global perspective?
I think parents have been developing themselves as well, especially the pandemic. I've noticed that parents became very, a little bit difficult, I would say. Like, suddenly they were more aware of what they want, what kind of education they want to provide to their kids. Less passive than before. Before it was like weekend classes and summer classes and so on. Quantity was important, and it's changing towards quality. They still send their kids to classes on weekends and in summer and so on. But I feel that there's a mindset change from quantity to quality. At the same time, more parents travel abroad, accessibility online, they see a lot of different programs. It makes it interesting for schools. You can neglect parents and say, okay, that's their responsibility. They want their kids to learn different things at home, to learn different cultures, to travel, whatever. No, I think it's not separate. We should bring it together. If your school is traditional and you go back to a more traditional approach of Chinese education and some international courses, some language, English language courses, that's not sufficient anymore for the kids to develop well. Because before I was thinking like a real bilingual education is really helping kids to become fluent in different cultures, different languages, and that's disappearing a little bit, except when parents take responsibility and share with the school. So as a school, you need to be open towards your parents. You need to make sure that the education that parents are building up should not be too different than what the school is building up. My message here is bring school and parents closer together, and then it will benefit the development of the child.
Yeah, but this is quite difficult in China, where you have big schools and a lot of students and a very strict leadership. So does it work in public schools or only in private schools, what you're just saying?
Well, it doesn't really work in schools, but it works with parents. I do experience parents being more open to different initiatives. Let me give you an example. In Beijing, there is an organization. They were running a school before, but they got into financial trouble. They had to close down. So what they are doing now is working with parents, especially taking them to museums, taking them to nature parks, having a more clear concept of kids learning not only in the school, but also outside of the school. That's where different ideas are possible to come in. School is still very conservative, but you see that there's a tension growing between a more conservative approach of Chinese schools and parents who learn a more global international approach. And like I said, like they through organizations are visiting museums, scouting kind of events as well.
And do you think for this kind of program, do you really need flexpats, foreigners, to do this? There must be so many Chinese professionals with very, very good English skills, and they could do this as well, right? So what is the job market for flexpat right now?
I think you need foreign teachers, definitely, because again, when Chinese stay among themselves and you start off with a brilliant idea that you find everywhere all over the world, and the Chinese work on it, it will become a Chinese idea. And it will be executed, implemented in a Chinese way. So you need different minds to come in to open up the ideas of the local people. It's the same idea of bilingual education. You bring different people together. You bring different curriculums together. You try to blend them and you create extra value. It's the same now. People ask me all the time, oh, can you come in and help us? These kind of initiatives towards parents, to take them out to museums, to take them out to nature parks. I don't have the time to, but there is a demand coming from these organizations to involve foreigners. So definitely there is a market.
Yeah, I just think that the salary gap is quite high, right? So for foreigners, you need to create provide the complete package with housing and visa and home flights and so on. And at the same time, there are so many young professionals, English teachers, Chinese, really, really well educated, and they could do this for much lower rate. So if I understand you correctly, then the main challenge is that as soon as a Chinese teacher and a Chinese parents, they work together, then you don't have this international atmosphere, right? So could you not create this somehow?
You make a good point. The salary package, I think, a lot of people say, oh, the salaries of foreign teachers went up in many cities. Well, that's because there was a shortage. Actually, there is a shortage of qualified people. It means that younger foreign expats who want to develop themselves in this market and who are younger need to accept that salaries are not that high anymore. But you need to balance this. You want to find great experiences to develop yourself. Well, don't look at the salary package that much. Otherwise, you exclude yourself from plenty of excellent experiences to develop yourself. And we should take these opportunities, not look at the salary package. So If, say it like this, if you can make 20,000 with such an organization and you can make 25 to 28,000 at a bilingual school, I would choose for the project that can develop yourself, so to have less salary.
So how about you yourself? You've been here quite a long time, and you are how old now?
I'm 59 right now, so I'm reaching the age of 60, where I'm not clear anymore will I be able to continue to work in China or not.
So I think this is a good age to say, okay, now you can look back and you can say, did the strategy you take regarding money and education and challenges and development, was it a good strategy or not? So what is your own view and what's your advice how to develop yourself as a language professional?
If you specifically look at language, it's more about being multilingual. It will help you to understand different perspectives. I see a lot of expats from the UK, they only speak English, so they struggle. They are limited to UK style international programs in schools, and that's a pity because you can learn so much more from different cultures.
How could you approach this? And if you were a teacher coming in from the UK to China, you're 25 years old, and now you have the chance to work in China for 5 years. So what could you really do to take the best out of these 5 years?
You could work for an international school because international schools are really diverse. But you might end up doing your thing and having little time spending with these different nationalities in your school. Or you could choose for a more Chinese program where they have good ideas. And if you look around, when you search for jobs, most expats, for example, I'm 25 years old from the UK. I will look at the best salary package and I still see that. Well, it doesn't help people that much because they change after 1 year, they change after 2 years. They're always searching, searching, searching. They should look more at opportunities where they can develop themselves. So it's, I think that what we need is a better guidance in the HR market. HR agents, they just want to make the commission as soon as possible, fill up this position, this position. They don't care about these foreigners, how they develop. So it's again the same issue as before with bilingual education. It's like how the Chinese education plus the international education, how do I create that extra value? So it's repetitive here. Different markets come together. How do I create that extra value? HR agents should become more like counselors, helping the foreigners to develop themselves, understanding which projects in China would be helpful for the foreigners to develop themselves. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, but I think that's a big challenge. I think when you came to China, you were kind of a little bit of a education career professional, I would say, right? Not just a China adventurer. You had a background in education, correct? And then you tried to apply this education background into the challenge that you found in China. And do you see the same now with teachers coming to China, or are they younger and don't really have education background in their home country?
You have a lot of foreign students coming in from all kind of countries all over the world, and they better understand China, and they are more aware of the opportunities in China. Some start up their own business, using their business to be more independent, to say like, okay, I can work for a school using my company. I can work for a project using my company. I can even combine them. I can talk to the school. I work for you 2 days a week, and then I will work for the project 3 times a week. These are the foreigners from countries different than the UK, the European countries. So these people, they adapt themselves much better to the Chinese market. I feel that the Europeans still focus too much on status of the job, salary package of the job, and that's the wrong point of view.
What did you need to get friendly with China to really integrate here? What was important to you? And what is your advice to education professionals how to really integrate in China?
Now your question is really nailing me, Francis. I've been in China such a long time, and I started off wrongly, because I like you said, I came in as an education expert, and I had experience with policy level, working with schools, working with administration, and I thought like, hey, I'm well experienced. Let's have a good experience in China. But it takes time to realize that. See it like this: my first 7 years in China, I discovered China. I had to realize that no, I'm not an expert in China. I still need to learn a lot of things. For example, when I was training the Chinese school principals, all my luggage I took, my books in school management and in organizational behavior, I couldn't use them. Because the logic, the way of organizing education, the way of listening to the authorities and the upper levels and then going down, 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 that was so different than what I was used to. So I couldn't use my books anymore. That's the first 7 years of discovery. It takes a long time before I realize that. I think at the end of these 7 years, I just focused on people, getting working together with people, understanding people, and then to do redevelop myself. The next 7 years is building up confidence. It's often false confidence because you are still challenged by the Chinese who don't always like the foreigner to be there or who see it as a competition. And then the third period of 7 years for me was more experimenting, experiencing different mindsets, like the bilingual education period came in here, trying out different things as long as you look for that added value. So now I'm I think in my fourth period of 7 years, and it's like I know what works. I know what will not work. I see a problem today, I know what will happen in 3 years when that problem will grow. So it's give your time to discover things, build up confidence, but realize that it's not always, it might be a false confidence. So you have to challenge yourself all the time. Experiment, try out different things. Don't be afraid to lose sometimes because you learn from it. That's when you come to the point where I'm at now, where you are confident and it works.
So you have been working for and with a lot of Chinese leaders in the schools where you're working. So how do you deal with that, working for a Chinese boss and also colleagues who might be competitive? How did you do that?
Yeah, that's. I think I can write a book about this. It's really hard to work with Chinese principals because they are the strongest one within their own culture. For me, it's more like looking for a conflict script, because you need to challenge these people. Of course, first I had to build up trust because I'm a professional. I'm helping the school, but I feel that there are different ideas with the Chinese leadership. Can I give you an example?
Of course.
I started in 2014 with the bilingual primary school program in Wuhan. It was a boarding school, full boarding, from grade one primary up till grade six in primary school. And I was like, wow, grade one kids going into boarding. But finally, I saw the benefits of it later on. The kids come in on Monday and the parents pick them up on Friday. It means you don't have much exposure time towards parents. And I felt that the school was a little bit rough at the gate. Don't put that bag here. No, don't come in. Bang, bang, bang. And I feel like, if you want to be international or bilingual, you need to change the culture. And the best way is to change it at the gate. So I started off being friendly to everyone at the gate on Monday morning. Good morning, how are you? Good morning, how are you? And I continued the second week, adding a little bit more of English. And the third week, adding a little bit more of English. And they came to me, the leadership. Are you having English corner at the gate?
That's great. That's really fantastic.
And I said, no, I want to be open to the parents, make them feel more comfortable, instead of shouting at them. And it was like, oh my God. And they suddenly realized that they were shouting at the people. And I was being the friendly one. And they said like, but that's a good way of doing things. So that was one example that worked so well. To be there as an international, to say like, hey, I'm different. And if you accept this, we can do this program. But I have another example that is really funny as well. I stayed 4 years at that school. So in my second or third year, I don't remember, we were doing weekly the raise the flag and singing the Chinese anthem. And I had always at the end 3 minutes of acting where we selected kids from within the program and we had a small script and they were acting something in English that was funny, that was attractive. And if you have like 2,000 kids looking at this, you need to be attractive. And it worked well. But there was a moment again where I could bring in a lot of international things into the school. I could even bring in a Barcelona football team because they were organizing different camps in different provinces in China and they were selecting a school. And they came to me and I said, like, okay, we can use my school to have young kids practice and then make a selection of which kids would be able to go to Barcelona for a bigger camp. My school leader said, like, no, we cannot do this because the education authorities, they don't want the outside organizations to come in. I said, come on, you don't always have to listen to them. But it wasn't yet a no. And then I thought, like, no, I need to give a message. So I made a script for that weekly flag raising ceremony, the acting out at the end. It was about ice cream and an ice cream vendor and kids having, wow, an ice cream vendor. And then this small like English practice. I brought in a real ice cream vendor. I got him into school, but then the principal told, like, I don't want him to have real ice cream because kids cannot eat ice cream at the school. And I said, like, I will have real ice cream. So we acted out, and then the kids had to ask, like, oh, can I have some ice cream? Yes. How many scoops do you want? Oh, give me 2 scoops, real ice cream. Punk. And I saw fire coming from that Chinese principal to me.
Can really imagine, yeah. So cool.
Throwing fire at me, and I was smiling at her, and after like 30 seconds, she began to smile as well. So it's like,
so you kind of break the spell with your own humor, right? I mean, I think this is the best way, and it's also the best way how to stay kind of comfortable yourself in your own position, that you're like the guest in this organization and you have to follow the rules. But if you only follow the rules, you're going to be unhappy, get a burnout. If you look back on your wonderful career, which you said so many stories about, what are you really thankful about?
I'm thankful for all these Chinese people who gave me the opportunity, who allowed me to challenge them and to challenge myself. We started off in a lot of difficult projects at that time. 99, with the school principals, I was working with the trainers of the school principals. My Chinese counterpart, one professor, he struggled himself. I was struggling myself with the culture. And the difference in approach in school management and leadership and organizational behavior. You find a balance with each other. You go through difficult moments as well. We even continue to work on that project in the poorest areas of the Shanxi province. And we had conflicts. We drank beer after these conflicts. I'm so thankful for these people. And I have a few other people. Like that one principal in Wuhan that I choose my conflicts with. I'm really thankful for these people that even I pushed it hard towards them, they were still there to accept me and to support me. And that's the great thing about Chinese people. So we should not be afraid of them. But if you come with good ideas and they don't always understand them, they are still open for it.
That's such a fantastic message. That's really fantastic. So what's next for you in your career? I know you're in a critical age now, I know, but just if you could dream and there's no limitation, what would you do?
Well, I Francis, I wish I could dream and have...
You can. Today you can.
So I'm happy with my job at my current school. I'm the school development coordinator at the Canadian International School in Kunshan. Kunshan is close to Taicang, Suzhou, Shanghai, a wonderful area. I would like to stay in this area because it's a very vibrant area, and Flexpats is definitely showing the vibrance of that area. And professionally, I think I'm open for different things. I'm not sure if I will get a continuation of my work permit.
You will, I'm sure. You have so much good guanxi in China. I'm sure you can get that way. I'm very, very sure.
Yeah, but the government is a little bit strange because...
Trust me, it's going to work.
Okay. So my wife is active in the art world. She has a non-profit art space in Wuhan. So through this, we know the art world in China. So at the school right now, I have a good artist friend and his daughter studying at my school. So she loves art as well. So I'm involving students into curating exhibitions at school. Once they become familiar with curating exhibitions at school, we will organize their exhibitions elsewhere in Kunshan, in Suzhou, in Shanghai. So it's again opening up the learning opportunities of students. I'm still passionate helping young people, but at the same time, the art field is opening up. I would love, even if I have to go back or I'm moving between China and Europe, helping Chinese kids to study at top art school.
That's a wonderful job. Yeah, that's a wonderful challenge. I really do hope that you can find a way, and I'm very, very sure that you will find a way to stay and make this dream come true. I don't think age can be a limitation in this. I know there's some rules and some regulations, but there's always a way, and I hope you will find it. What is your message to anyone who listens to this episode? And if you could dream, who should listen to this episode?
I think everyone who's in China, it doesn't matter which position you take up, which sector you work in, you want to hurry your career, you will fail. You need time to get to understand the culture, encounter the culture and the people here, work together to learn from the people here, discovering yourself and experiment, try out different things. I think if you don't do that, you get frustrated, and we don't always admit that we are frustrated in this difficult country, but we need to be more proactive.
That's a wonderful message. That's really wonderful. And what I really want to tell the audience today, I know it's difficult. You're not 59 and you don't have so much experience, but just imagine one day you're going to be, hopefully, you're going to be 59 and you don't have to wait so long to explore your career and to be more relaxed about this and not to worry too much about money and about job safety, but just to really to use your career as an adventure, as like a life backpacking tour, like Luke. If you know anyone out there, any friend of yours who you think could use such a kind of a nudge to think more about his or her career, about his or her place in and with China, please take a screenshot of this podcast and share it with your friend. You can send a link because this is the best way you can support Luke, you can support us, you can support the China Flexpert community, and we can be a little bit more popular and be a little bit more famous to share this message throughout the world. With this, thank you very much, Luke, for being a guest on the China Flexpert podcast today. 谢谢 and 再见.
Thanks you. Bye bye.